CliffCentral.com.
All right. Oh my God, this is a huge story. Before we move on to anything else, apparently, this I have from Calif and Avestes, and who regularly messages us. He says, this just in, the final straw that broke the camel's back. One of South Africa's most honorable drinking institutions, the University of Stellenbosch, has banned all alcohol from...
I was going to bring this up, yes.
Banned all alcohol from university residences and accommodation. Now, the woke left have gone too far. Everyone might as well just study through UNISA. Mm. It's over, people.
I don't actually mind that. I mean, I appreciate the humor in that, and I love a varsity Joel when I was in varsity as much or more than is healthy. Definitely more than is healthy. So, like, not judging people in that phase of life that want to let off some steam, but, like, if you're on university premises, like, rent something to live in outside of the premises and do whatever you want. When it's essentially a university hotel and you're there to learn, I get it. Like, if you want to live in the university facilities, don't jaw here. Jaw elsewhere.
To this. This is what the university is saying. The university is temporarily, I emphasize, temporarily banning alcohol in their university residences and private students' accommodation. So your whole thing of, yes, on campus, but also off campus as well. Private students' accommodation.
I do not like the police coming into our private lives, and I do not like universities being surrogate parents. If you are not adult enough or mature enough in any sense to conduct yourself a little irresponsibly, but mostly keep yourself alive at university, then you shouldn't go to one. And I'm just very nervous about letting authorities into places where people live.
I agree, but it's their facility. It's their premises. You don't have to live there. And you get like digs.
No, they're saying private residences as well.
Well, you can't drink in your digs.
Yeah.
Because res is, in my understanding, res is like a university thing, and digs is when a bunch of kids ruin a house.
Yes.
That, I'm fully with you, is a bunch of bullshit. Like, if res is technically university property, it's up to them.
Like, can you imagine the campus police or whatever douchery that is?
Can you imagine the voluntary students on that, like, you know, campus student wellness brigade?
Yeah. Are they going to be
predictable triangular and stripy tattoos?
Yeah, those are the people who are going to come in with their long hair and their and they're going to tell you that you can't be doing what you're doing. You've just written a monster exam and you go home and you have a beer with your mates in your residence, and suddenly these people, these virtue police, are going to come in. Oh my God, guys!
All you've got to do is tell them that by stopping students from drinking, it's discrimination against students and unequal treatment and therefore unfair and undemocratic. And just give them the usual, get one of them stirred up and angry on behalf of the students, and then that one will put out the cry of lynch, and then they'll go lynch the university. You can deflect. Mm. If you can make a case for...
I think this is bad news.
Well, can you imagine the Christian Students Association Stellenbosch poppies that police this, like, Aranstag, jylle moenie drink nie. Ja, luister, nie. Ja, nie.
I had a pretty good life up until I heard a Valley Girl / Afrikaans accent.
Pretoria Noord. Is
that how they speak
in Pretoria Noord? Ja. Really? Aranstag,
ja. Why do you have to tilt your head when you do it as well?
Because otherwise the sound doesn't come out. And watch, my head is straight and then I tilt it and then sound ja.
It just works. Yeah. Right. The university is taking this a step further by saying that they're doing this as a bid to combat alcohol abuse among students and also combating gender-based violence. They emphasize that it's temporary because it is currently in review, but it came into effect on the 1st of January this year.
This is what happens when parents don't raise children properly, and then they expect the school to raise their children, and after that the university to continue infantilizing their children and raising them within a rules structure that they never had at home.
They alerted the students in a brief saying that the decision was reached because of rising concerns for students with two incidences highlighted.
If they did this at Rhodes, it would close down.
Absolutely.
No one would go. No, there would be no point. Grahamstown would cease to exist. It would be swallowed up into the earth.
The first case that was highlighted in this brief was following the death of a student last year after he was taken off life support when he choked in his sleep. And the specific circumstances surrounding the death are still not clear, but the university heard rumors around alcohol.
Bon Scott of ACDC choked on his own vomit, just like that student did after a massive drinking and drugs binge. We didn't ban rock music.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Stupid idiots. Mm. Dumb stuff happens, especially
or to being students. Australian.
Or being Australian. We didn't ban being Australian or rock music.
But the or fact toilets.
Like, who are these people who want to constantly make rules for the rest of us? Just because bad things occasionally happen does not mean you have the right to come in and shut down everyone else's privacy and fun.
Also, you fuck with Darwinism. Like, that the people who completely screw themselves up don't compete as well as those who don't. And like you as a person that wants to be virtuous and not do these bad things that everyone needs to be protected from, ultimately benefit.
Yeah.
Because in theory, you'll do better in your life.
What I'm not clear on is how long this quote-unquote...
Everybody's
unquote,
equal and has to be totally equal in exactly our way.
I wonder how long this review period will last, because they've set up a whole bunch of different bodies and they have a whole bunch of people involved with something like this. No student is even allowed to store alcohol in any student accommodation.
See, if now they're going to be going through your cupboards. Yeah.
If
Watch.
You even store alcohol, it will be a residence disciplinary matter.
Oh my God, can you imagine? And yeah. Suddenly you're in the gulag.
I mean, for
when
me,
are you
for
supposed
me, the
to
res versus digs thing is a big distinction.
That's where you separate from.
Yeah, if you're okay. Fucking with people's digs, then I mean,
when are you supposed to abuse alcohol? This is a good question.
So they're saying university students can't drink no matter where they live.
Ulrich says, when are you supposed to do this? When you're a father of five with two ex-wives and a car? Can we ban being Australian? Oh shit! If we can, why haven't we? That's a good question.
That is a great question.
This is not the first time that the university has banned alcohol in hostels. They did it in 2012 for 6 months. It clearly didn't last. And I think the reference to private res is pointing towards private hostels, which have arrangements with the university. It doesn't and cannot apply to a private house. Mm-hmm. So, Gord, that means you're still on the side of the university.
What? No?
Yeah, because they can't do it to a private house.
Yeah, so then a dig should be exempt.
Yeah, but yes, I'm okay it is with exempt, that. But private hostels, as in hostels that are not run by the university, they're owned by other people, yeah. But they follow university rules.
Okay, so if you're renting somewhere, yeah. Even in a digs.
Yeah.
By the way, there are digs that are run by universities as well, for those of you who don't know that. So mm-hmm. Those would be digs where you wouldn't want to live, Gord.
Hey, for someone who's not a parent, you know how so much about parenting, how Gareth, you criticize parents for pretty much anything that involves kids, and I wonder why. Well, because you're raising fucking shitheads. That's
and also
why.
Not and blinded by the pheromones that make you like the thing.
Yeah.
Like, no comment on your kids. I'm sure they're lovely, but kids
I'm
in
sure
general.
I'm sure they're not. I'm sure they're shitheads. Like
there's
the
a thing that happens at a restaurant that's not specifically a family restaurant. Like when you take your kid to goddamn Turn and Tender and you've developed an immunity, like how people allergic to cats can become completely immune to a specific cat. That's what happens. You literally can develop an immunity to the allergy of that specific
what a
cat.
Comparison.
So you have learnt to block out the frequency of the sound of your child being an asshole. So there's a restaurant of 70 people, and the only 3 people that can't hear your child screaming on purpose because you're ignoring it is you.
You said 3 people.
Yeah, you and your wife and the other kid.
And the yeah.
Also screaming. It's your family.
No, your girlfriend. Your wife and your
also,
girlfriend.
Like, what I love is the whole family that need to take all 18 kids, mom and dad, grocery shopping. I mean, if you're a single parent with no support and the only way you can grocery shop is you've got no one to leave the kids with and you're battling financially, fine. But if there's a boyfriend and a girlfriend, there's a mommy and a daddy or 2 mommies and 2 daddies, one must stay home with the 9 kids. And the other one can do the grocery shopping because it's awful. So, yeah, people tend to be immune to the dander of their own children.
Put that on the list of things Gord is passionate about. Kucho, just to get to your point here, of course I'm criticizing parents because no one else does. The government and education department do not ever blame parents. They always blame teachers or schools. It's parents. And you are the first point of defense against a bad kid. if you don't raise your kid properly, I am going to tell you that you've raised your kid badly because no one else will. I don't care if you don't like me, and I'm not looking to have children either. So, yes, I'm perfect. I don't have kids. I am perfect. I can criticize you as much as I want.
Yeah.
I'm the only person who's going to be objective about your kids.
And there's probably a reason you haven't had kids, because you think they're shitty.
I don't think I would do a good job. There's the truth. I think I'd be a terrible parent. That's why I don't have any. That's called responsibility.
I don't hate children. I just think that, like, people who are high and mighty about having kids, it's like, well, a biological reaction happened that you probably didn't plan, may have planned, but probably didn't plan, and now you're better than everyone that hasn't done that.
Yeah. It's like, and please, chimpanzees can have children. Camels can have children. Insects regularly.
Amoeba can replicate, yes. Please.
So it's not a successful, like, this is your, you've done so well.
Split the atom. You haven't split the atom.
Please, do me a favor. Anyway, so there we go.
Some Kobe Bryant updates.
Yeah, I want to play this clip. Can I play the clip of Kobe?
Sure.
This is cool. I mean, we spoke about him.
His beef was the best.
What?
Nothing. Okay, that's a beef joke. Pun.
No, I didn't get it.
Kobe beef. It's his.
Okay, yum. Carnivores.
I'll fuck off into my corner. I'll be there until further notice.
Carnivores. Shock.
Carnivores.
That is some... This is going to be a new area.
Cisgender.
Hang on. Yeah, gosh. This is going to be a new area for discrimination. You're a carnivorist. Yeah. Or you're an...
You're meatist.
An herbivorous.
I'm sorry. That came out before I could, you know, filter it through my say nice things filter. Ooh,
we've discovered a new paradigm for the woke left.
Also,
they can become herbivorous. There's
now two kinds of meatist.
You're a meatist.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't like fish or red meat.
I'm a carnivore. I got that big C energy. I eat whole rib cages. Cow for me is like three meals, maybe two if I'm hungry.
All right, here's Kobe. So let's get back to it, because Kobe said in his own words, and I loved this. It was in an interview he did on 60 Minutes. If you wonder why there are people who are, you know, saying things about how great he was and how much he influenced their lives, even if they never met him online, then maybe this is the reason. The guy was far more than a basketball player.
Basketball really moved me. No other sport touched me like the game of basketball. You know, when I would get really upset and I would get really down, I could always just pick up a basketball and go to the playground and just shoot and just put myself in the scenario of being in a finals game.
Just to the basket. Oh, what a move for Kobe Bryant as the shot clock expires.
Basketball itself is such a metaphor for life. Life is too short to get bogged down and be discouraged. You have to keep moving. You have to keep going. Put one foot in front of the other, smile, and just keep on rolling. And you continue to try to ask questions to try to be better, you know, be better as a father, be better as a husband, be better as a creator.
Thank you guys for all the years of support. Thank you guys for all the motivation. Thank you for all the inspiration. From the bottom of my heart, God, I love you guys. What can I say?
You can just hear this. This was a dude who, he didn't see the cake as only being so big. Like, it just kept getting bigger and bigger for him, and he had more and more to give. It was never about taking away. It was never about putting anyone else down. You know, these are things that I suppose I can learn from, you can learn from, a lot of us can.
You had a whole thing that I saw, because people are sharing a lot of stuff on Instagram, and some of it is, don't forget about me, and some of it is really, like, moving like that. Mm. And the one thing was just about how your biggest challenge has got to be finding what makes you happy. And you were talking about the stuff you want to do on the weekend and that, and people kind of stop and go, wait, shit, if I had... And the immediate thing, if you ask somebody, like, what would you like your life to be like? They're like, well, obviously a European lotto. It's like, okay, no... Like, so people are like, hate my job, I hate my boss, I'm underpaid, I don't like where I live. And you're like, okay, so you've got a long list of what you don't like about your life. But when asked, if tomorrow you could have your dream job, get like a good salary for it, where you're not stressed month to month, you're not now a gajillionaire and you're choosing Ferraris, but you're earning double what you're currently earning.
Yeah.
And you're doing any ordinary job that you want, people... Their jaw drop. They have no idea what they do want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just a long, and not everybody. Some people like you have found a calling and gone with it and made a success. And other people have vocations where they sacrifice financial security to be a nurse or a doctor. But 9 out of 10 people, I would estimate, cannot answer the question, what would you rather be doing every day? within the realms of reasonable possibility, would you like to be a surf instructor? Would you like to sail boats? Would you like to whatever run a business? Yeah, run a business that sells aquariums. That's a successful aquarium business. What do you want to do? And there's like the Dalai Lama. I'm having a philosophy minute.
Oh, go ahead.
Good mate of mine. Yeah.
My shoulders sore from pulling this piano out.
This philosophy minute is brought to you by BetterThanYou.com for people who are better than you. So the Dalai Lama says, like, the secret of life is so complicated that it can be studied by monks on mountains for 100 years and still not get to it. Mm-hmm. But it's also so simple that it's this: be happy. Work to be happy and try, and then the secondary thing is try not to take away from the happiness of other things. But it's hard to work to be happy, because you think I'll be happy if I go on the Jewel, not in Stellenbosch tonight. But actually not doing that is what will make you happy. So figure out what it is that you do want to do. Thank you. This Philosophy Minute was brought to you by BetterThanYou.com.
And that was exactly a minute. Yeah. Everybody, do the snappy thing. All right.
Bolelo's influence is spreading.
And I think I hate to just hop on emotions for the sake of, but this guy was just a solid guy. The more I hear about him, the more people who knew him personally speak about him, just like, Kobe was a solid guy.
And there were allegations against him about sexual misconduct, and to my knowledge, they were dismissed. I don't actually know. I'm kind of asking more than I'm saying. I don't know what happened with that. But like, immediately, righteous people who haven't seen what happened with the case are going to be like, so quick for the world to forget he's a rapist. It's like, is he? Do you know that?
But just one of the things that even came out from his past interviews was the reason why he used a private helicopter.
Because public helicopters, people are just so gross. They lean on you. Okay, they don't stand for the elderly. They're never on time.
Why he charged helicopters within Los Angeles? Because he was very committed to training, but at the same time, he was very committed to spending as much time as he could with his kids.
Yeah,
so he would always go from training to watching his kids.
I don't think there's anything wrong with someone spending their money on private transport of any kind.
Yeah.
Do what you want with your money. It's yours. But it's unfortunate in this case that led to his death, which is obviously a great sadness to the people who are left in his family who are missing him now.
So just two quick stories.
And let's just not forget his daughter as well. We're going to make a noise about anything. There's this young girl who seems like she was on a trajectory to greatness as well, and just gone too soon. And there were other people on the helicopter too. Who weren't celebrities,
They were on their way to the daughter's basketball match. But two updates on the story. The first being TMZ having to defend themselves. TMZ was actually the first website or any news source that came out with the story. And they're a little under fire because they didn't consult or let Kobe's family know before they leaked the story.
So people are sure they have to under the bounds of news. If they had confirmation that the story was true from credible sources that had been fact-checked, as a news outlet, they can report it.
CNN shows us shots from war.
You don't have to ask the family. I mean, I get that it's inconsiderate in that regard, but they don't owe the family any more. All they need to do is be responsible journalists in that they have no reasonable reason to doubt what they're reporting is untrue.
Right.
Or is true.
Harvey Levin, the founder of TMZ, is defending the site, saying, actually, we spoke to Kobe's people, even though they didn't directly speak to Vanessa, the wife, or any of the immediate family. And then right now, if you go on to change.org, the website all about petitions, more than 2 million people have signed online signatures to get the NBA logo to now feature a silhouette of Kobe Bryant as opposed to the current one, which features Jerry West.
That's bad.
No, that's ridiculous. Stop it.
Sure. All right. Gord, a little update here. Someone says when they went to Stellenbosch, they had to use the university housing as their parents wouldn't pay for private. I learned how to handle my booze proudly while in res, and I only had to study for 9 years to graduate with a master's. Tertiary education is in booze. We trust.
Yeah.
No, okay, not I even mean, joking.
Those are the drinking years.
Yeah, tertiary education is for adults who need to take responsibility for their own actions. What's next? Daily homework and roll call. Maybe you'd prefer a curfew and late nights out by 9 p.m.
Also, the same thing's going to happen that it used to with Boom when I was a student. They're just going to do it anyway, and now it's going to be on the sketchy.
Yeah.
And, Yeah.
Okay, a lot of, typically, a lot of masters telling, are 6 years, right?
Yeah, he did it too long.
3 years, no. Yeah, 3 years evens everything out.
Nine is lots of get fucked Gord comments, but a lot of them backed up with praise for Gord. This is from a Liverpool supporter called Neil, who's obviously a long-time hater of Gord and other Man United supporters. But that's fine. He says, get fucked, Gord. I'm 40 years old. There is no way you can grow immunity to cats. I almost die when I get close to those little assassins of nature.
Well, actually, possibly it's not every single person, but this is not fake news. You develop an immunity to things that make you ill over time, and each cat's dander, and it's actually the spit that gets on their skin. You become allergic to that. So with more exposure to the same cat, you will become non-allergic or less allergic, but you'll still be allergic to other cats. This is why people who move in with somebody that have a cat stop needing antihistamines. This is a real fact, and Oz can Google it. Although you may be so severely allergic that in your case, possibly not. But I mean, have you ever tried to live in a house with the same cat for more than a couple of months? That cat will stop affecting you.
How terrible a cat.
Just like my one like homie cats. That lived with me for a year, he was on antihistamines for a month, and now he can rub my cat against his face. That's not a euphemism, an actual cat, and he can rub it against his actual face and not get ill.
We always used to have cats when we were kids, but I don't want a cat anymore. I find them, they're deceitful.
And terrible.
Although as a Liverpool fan, I hope you never get over your cat allergy, and I hope that you end up working at the fucking SPCA. But I also love you too, Bill. You're a legend.
All right. thanks for pointing out, says Fatima, that it is not rocket science to have kids. I have a pharmacy degree. I have a PhD, a medical degree, and an MBA. Holy shit. But I haven't had anywhere near the fuss made over me that are made over chicks who are having a baby in the family.
100%. You said that, you said Fatima in such a way that it sounded like her name was Emma. Like, you were like, says Fatima.
Fatima.
You were like,
Fatima.
Okay, so there we go. It's not Fatima.
No.
It's Fatima.
Fatima says that they make more of a fuss over some chick having a baby, and she could be asleep during the whole thing and get pregnant during the whole thing asleep.
Remember that story. Yeah. A couple of... Yeah. I think it was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's kind of rapey. I mean,
That's full on rape.
No, but I mean, if someone gives you consent to gun them to sleep or gun them awake, then it's not rapey.
I'm not laughing, you don't know what conversation went. It was like 2 years ago. There was a woman in a vegetative state. She was living in some living assistance
place. Please don't tell me a person in a vegetative state had a baby.
She had a baby.
That's like Kill Bill.
We covered it on the story. On the show.
The Hills Have Eyes, too, where they keep the women and breathe. Oh, so rough.
I just remembered it now.
So, I've forgotten what I was even going to say because that was so rough.
Speaking of people in a vegetative state, the Democrats who are running for president.
Segue of the show. Segue of the show.
Shut up, Gord. The Democrats have... The New York Times is fawning over these really shitty candidates that are left over in the Democratic Party. It's Bernie, and it's Elizabeth Warren, and Amy Klobuchar, and Pete Buttigieg, and Joe Biden.
And it's all of the others that we identified on the show. We don't know them. They're like 12 in total.
Nobody except the New York Times cares. And guess what important questions they're asking them? Who was your celebrity crush? Do you want to hear who Elizabeth... I know you've thought about this all your life. Elizabeth Warren. Oh, I want to know who her celebrity crush is. And now you get to find out, thanks to the New York Times, that paragon of journalistic integrity.
It's this combination in American politics, and I mean in politics in general, this whole idea that Donald Trump can win an election. The presidential election is a game of who's more famous. Who's got more fans? That's why if The Rock ran for president, he would definitely win. Will Smith, at the height of his fame, if he ran for president, he would have won. Oprah, she's in with a good chance of being the first female president and the second president of color because she's that famous. I think 10 years ago, better chance. But it is literally celebrity culture, and that's it. It's voting for your favorite rapper, basically. And that's why this shit... Now, they've probably put millions or thousands into research of which celebrities these candidates should
They're not even going to tell us who they really... They're going to choose people who they think we will be impressed.
Well, they will have a team of people researching
that. Let's listen. Here it is, the stuff you've been waiting for.
Do you have a celebrity crush?
Yes, Prince.
That's Amy Klobuchar. She says Prince, but he's dead. So You're a necrophile.
Yes, Prince.
The Rock, come
the
on.
Rock. The Rock.
The Rock.
The Rock.
Come on, Grandma. You like The Rock? That's Elizabeth Warren,
she
by the way.
She likes The Rock hard D.
Prince.
The Rock, come on. Just look at that man. He's eye candy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's something so
you
gross.
Just objectified a dude who's like started, he's the highest earning Hollywood actor in the world. He's started $7
oh,
production.
Come on.
He's got a Under Armour range of clothing that he sort of co-collaborated with on them and has the best selling
anyway,
sneaker.
Anyway, what should she have said?
Oh, he's got a body on him. Now, I don't mind that she did that. I'm just saying.
I mean, she's Pocahontas.
She's not going to get like lefty lynched. For that,
yeah.
But if a man candidate from the Republicans said, my favorite porn star, Jules Ventura, little body on her, oh my God,
oh,
it would be fucking down. The okay. apocalypse.
Well, let's hear, because this is going to make it very awkward for Joe the Biden and Bernie.
Or rather a lady who's got like mega achievements, like done some shit, and then, oh my God, she's so hot. That's the equivalent of The Rock being eye candy.
Right. Oh, I hear
so
you.
Here it is. Let's see what Andrew Yang is the one I left out, because he's just really not a player in this, even though I think he's the smartest guy in the Democratic Party,
oh, really?
Frankly. Yes, look him up. You'll see his policies are not nearly as bad as all the others. But here he is, Andrew Yang. Who do you choose?
I'm a happily married man. I think my wife's a star, and I've got a big crush on her.
Do you? Oh, boy.
That was the team of PR people speaking.
So there's a boring answer.
And it's also, it's like skirting the answer.
That's like when you have your friends around for drinks and I mean, a little drunk and you start saying, you know who I would have if I could have anybody in the world? And then one of the guys goes,
my wife.
I already have the perfect
girlfriend. Yeah, but it's skirting the question.
Fuck off out of my body!
It's skirting the question.
They get out!
They didn't say...
You piece of boring shit! Don't ever come into my house again!
Hashtag triggered. But that's skirting the question. The question wasn't, who is your most attractive person to you? It's which celebrity is your favorite? You can even have a little caveat, like, well, look... I think my wife's the most beautiful woman in the world. But as far as celebrities go, I choose whoever. Like,
no, but didn't you hear his breakdown? He says, I think my wife is a star.
I've never heard of her. If Sia's never heard of her, she's not famous.
Because, let me tell you, Andrew Yang's wife, she's probably not even watching this clip. If she's genuinely happy with him, and we have no reason to believe she isn't, then it doesn't matter what he tells other people. But if he'd said he had a crush on Angelina Jolie, then the big headline would be, oh my God, Angelina Jolie is who Andrew Yang thinks about while he's with his wife.
Yeah,
which is nonsense.
Exactly.
All right, let's see who else is here. Pete Buttigieg, famously Mayor Pete, the first gay candidate to run in America. So let's take a listen to what he thinks.
On her. Do you have a celebrity crush? Not for the New York Times to know about.
My favorite actor and actress.
Oh, wow, that's boring, Pete.
I quite like that answer, because it sort of says, A, it's probably somebody racy, and B, like, this isn't news.
Gareth, don't do close-ups on their faces.
I'm showing you their faces after they answer these, because you actually have to go and watch
that man clip. Literally looks like he survives on a diet of feces, metaphorical and real.
No, Gordon Laws.
All right,
that
next.
That grin is for one thing only.
All right, here's Michael Bloomberg, who's 9,000 years old, and he's about to tell us who his celebrity crush is. If it isn't Betty White... We must all leave the room.
It will count beautifully.
Yeah.
Favorite actor and actress, Lorna Dern and William Macy, who starred in a movie that I produced.
Alicia Keys.
Oh, Jesus.
That's a humble brag. I like it.
He just mentioned
a bit Weinstein-ish.
Yeah, he mentioned both. He said, I'll have the couple, thank you. I suppose that's open-minded, but how boring. Okay, next.
Alicia Keys is a fantastic artist.
Oh, wow. Tom Steyer. Now, he's also a billionaire. He
also
Alicia
happens
Keys.
To be a belter. Like, you didn't say Adele.
Yeah, Alicia Keys is hot. She's
properly.
A talent. Yes.
Alicia Keys is a fantastic artist and a really good person.
Oh.
Okay.
Don't know what that's got to do with it. It's just a crush.
You're allowed to have a crush on people for being nice people. It's the only reason. Look, personality is a perfectly good reason.
It's just a personal opinion.
But like, if personality wasn't a good enough reason to have a crush, I would still be a virgin. So I'm for it.
Being attracted. Say that again.
If personality wasn't a valid reason to have a crush, I would never get laid.
Fair enough. Okay, next.
Crushing on you, Evelyn.
Oh, Andrew Yang again.
On message.
Oh, they didn't even ask Joe and Bernie because right?
I still want to call it lemon and herb Sanders.
Okay, there we go. So those are the most important things you ever heard from the Democrats who are running against Donald Trump.
Please, can they just give him an honorary colonelship so he can be Colonel Sanders?
They should make him honorary colonel in chief of something. That would be funny.
I'm sure she's heard that so many times by now.
You know, I've heard it a couple of times. I still think it's funny. I don't always laugh, but I like the sentiment, and I enjoy people who have a sense of humor. I am Bernie Sanders. I need your vote so that I can take all the money from the 1% and I can spread it around to the 100%, because my maths is 100% and 2.
And during the swinging 1920s, I used to, in the reefer madness, I guess I did deep fry my brain a little, so
I met Gatsby. I didn't like him. He was a bit too
ostentatious.
Very like to show people how much money he had. He had a plane. He had a car. He was a very rich man. I think it's
I partied at all of his parties, and I participated for many years.
But I partied with the servants. I would not be seen on the top floor with the Gatsbys.
Fantastic, awesome, man. And well-informed reader Tanya Sarah Smith says, both my husband and I are extremely allergic to cats, and although we took a couple of months to stop wheezing and get swollen eyes, she now sleeps in our bed. Suck it, Neil from Liverpool.
Yes, and here is someone else agreeing with you, Gord. This is Brendan, who says, I have a cat allergy, and my cat for 19 years, I also became immune to it. See? Oh.
Mm-hmm. Because cats did have the mind that? Control power out of the finger.
Do you want me to hold your purse with that?
That's why I like Gord, even though he's a Manc.
What's a Manc?
It's a United fan.
United supporter. I'm so glad you brought up the spit thing, but you fuckers will snuggle for a while. I'm not sure. That's Neil.
I tend to do the spit thing and then snuggle afterwards.
All right. Gross.
I think the listener means so the gross. Fact that it's the cat spit from them licking themselves that you're allergic to and not their hair. Or maybe you can slide in my DMs. I don't know.
Here is someone. KC is back with a compliment to Gord earlier, but now much less of a compliment.
Oh, shit.
Jules Venturi, your favorite porn star, isn't that hot. Pretty face, though, but no ass. Unlike Nicole du Papillon, the longest pussy lips I've ever seen.
Okay. And that's your vibe. You're like criticizing me because my porn star crush doesn't have a rad enough ass, and you're like, oh, long enough vaginal lips. I'm not sure, bro. I mean, each to their own. You're entitled to your opinion, but I'm not sure you're a candidate for mainstream judging. Same reason they never asked me to judge idols, because I'd be like, Slayer is better than you. You probably shouldn't be rating porn stars, mate.
I do like this. This is great news. They've made available 100,000 digital artworks from prominent Paris museum collections, which you can now get for free on the internet. You know, every now and then what happens is that these museums make available on the internet their collections. Now, for people who will never get to visit the Louvre, and there are many people who will not get to visit the Louvre, you might want to observe Jacques-Louis David's coronation of Napoleon up close, but you don't get to fly to Paris. Now you can see it in all its glory in digital format. You can download it onto your laptop and look at it there. It's enormous, but you'll get an idea.
Yeah, don't say anything sarcastic.
No, I was about to say it. Knowledge signaling, Gareth. Literacy, learned signaling.
Sorry, maybe I should bring back the piano music. But so much...
What's cool about this is that you can print that stuff at high res. If you get a quality printer to print it with good color matching, you can have good replications of these amazing artworks in your home.
And I'm surprised that's not illegal.
Well, it is if it's copyrighted artwork, but if they've made it available to the public in high definition or high res, you can. There's a lot of factors as well. Like you got to know how to set up printing. But take that to a proper printer that know what they're doing. Spend 100 or 200 rand printing it on proper paper. You can have a fucking properly, and they shoot it in the right light,
yeah,
so that it looks right. Yeah. So yeah, it's basically saying like, knock yourself out.
I remember
have a Joel with this
probably last year watching an insert about how this is like the new trend, and not even on paper. Like some
well,
of these artworks are properly replicated.
Yeah,
on
some
canvas.
Of them. Well, what they do now is they 3D print them. So they first of all do a digital scan of the thing. So you could get the brush strokes in a Van Gogh, for example, or other impressionist stuff where it's quite thick oil paint. And then it looks like the real deal.
The trompe l'oeil oil paintings with the relief oil on the... That's fucking epic.
Well, yeah, and...
Although, like...
I think
the colors on a 3D printer won't be perfect, but that's fucking cool.
I think there's something to be said for artists who can replicate art, you know, and this is something that you learn in art school, and there are some brilliant, brilliant artists. There are whole farms of people in China who just do this. You can go online and you can buy like a... Only the expert, the curator of the Smithsonian will be able to come into your house and go, that's not actually a Van Gogh. But otherwise, everyone else go, my God, what a beautiful painting. And sometimes, you know, the most famous paintings are not the most interesting ones. Sometimes there's some other stuff that the great masters did that you might want to put up somewhere on a wall because you appreciate
yeah.
it.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying.
This
like,
is great.
Assuming you print it properly with the kind of high-res stuff that they're probably doing, you can replicate. Like, I also, and you're going to be like, someone told me I've virtue signaled on this one, so I'm just a respecter of creative IP. I found some really cool images that I found on the, online that I wanted to print, but I couldn't find the originator of them. And so
I think you've told us about
it. Yeah, I just donated $100 to whatever cause. It was like UNICEF or some shit that was bouncing around Facebook, because it's like, okay, well, you shouldn't take other people's art and reproduce it for free, especially if those people are selling it somewhere. But at the same time, if you can't find where it's being sold, unlucky.
All right. So much to do. So many things to still get to. We have a little feature coming up, which you may have been part of for a couple of these episodes so far. We're in season one of GrowVests. We're talking about social impact investing. We're talking about Section 12J. And if you haven't heard all of these, you can go back and listen from the start. But we're on to episode four, and we're speaking to Malcolm Siegel, who's a non-executive director at GrowVest. He's in corporate advisory. He's also the director of something called the Mdluli Safari Lodge, which you might want to hear about. It's a possible investment opportunity. But remember, the thing about 12J is the tax benefit, among other things. So you'll hear about that in a minute. We will take any other messages you have on 0797482090. And don't forget that if you want to get your tickets, your free tickets, we're doing a special movie screening of Jojo Rabbit, Hyde Park, next Wednesday. So obviously it's only for Joburg people, unless you feel like driving up, I don't know, from Da'ar.
They'll be
movie.
Showing Cape Rabbit in... Never mind, that was terrible.
Oh,
shut up.
God.
Yeah, I'm going to see myself out.
Yeah. Email events@cliffcentral.com to get your hands on free tickets. That's events@cliffcentral.com. You can come and meet the crew. And we'll all be there on Wednesday next week, the 5th of February.
Listen, I'd just like to take a moment to formally apologize for my crap joke.
Oh, it was terrible.
I released it without thinking. I didn't consider the effect that it was going to have on the listeners.
You did.
We were just trying to have a good morning.
You have.
They depend on us
you have
for
marred,
entertainment.
You have marred our enjoyment.
And what I regret the most is that I've sullied this fine brand. My colleagues who are innocent have been smeared with the tarred with the brush of crap joke.
Tell them about children.
And all I can say is thank you to the lynching masses for showing me the error of my ways.
What about poverty? Holding up a mirror,
and I've got some deep introspection to do, and I just thank the lynch mob for setting me right in my ways. Please, let's continue with the show.
What about poor children? You didn't say that. You're a monster.
Oh, no. I hate poor children because I was upset about something else. So now you're saying that you're sorry about jokes, and jokes matter more than Boko Haram, so you hate Nigeria.
All right, okay. Get out of here, Gord. Let's get to GrowVest and see what's going on with Malcolm. We'll speak to him about Section 12J and a bunch of other interesting things, the Mdluli Safari Lodge, among others. All of that on the way for you on cliffcentral.com. It is Wednesday, and it's almost the end of January.
Cliffcentral.com.
It is time for our fourth episode in our series with GrowVest. It's all about Section 12J and what you need to know about it. We kick things off with a conversation with the CEO of GrowVest, Jeff Miller, to teach you a little bit about Section 12J of the Income Tax Act. And then we heard from Jeff again to talk about whether it's better to invest in a Section 12J instead of taking your money offshore. In our third installment, we got to pick the mind of next generation Section 12J, Darren Folds, who is a Meta Capital fund manager. And this month, we'll be looking at social impact investing, something which I think is particularly interesting and relevant because it has to do with something which is quite South African in its uniqueness. Section 12J was legislated by the government to encourage South African taxpayers to invest in local companies to receive a 100% tax deduction in the value of their investment. The investor in return receives a Section 12J tax certificate and venture capital shares. Now, that invested amount can be deducted from the investor's taxable income in the year in which the investment is made. And whether you're interested in setting up, looking for someone to finance or administer your venture capital company, CliffCentral.com has discovered that Grovest could be your innovative Section 12J specialist corporate advisory and finance partner. Today, I want to talk about an interesting project called the Mdluli Safari Lodge, which has established a benchmark and landmark for sustainability and community-driven tourism development in South Africa. And to talk to me about it is a non-executive director for Grovest, Malcolm Siegel, who's also corporate advisory and the director for the Mdluli Safari Lodge Limited. So how are you, Malcolm?
Great. All good. Thank you very much.
Good. I'm very curious about this project. First of all, how long has it been going? What is the Mdluli Safari Lodge before we get into 12J?
Yeah. So, look, it's actually a truly remarkable project. I tell you with some trepidation that I'll be working on this project for 22 years. Wow. I started working on this in the end of 1997, early 1998, which would demonstrate to you that it's been quite a complicated journey. But fortunately now the lodge or first phase of the lodge is now complete. The first phase is 50 luxury tents with all the ancillary facilities, restaurants, bars, gym, spa, etc., etc. And that'll be opening in January. The project is actually it's really special in the context of what this country needs. The history, if I can just spend a minute explaining the history.
Please.
The Mdluli community lived on land adjacent to Pretoria's Corp Rest Camp, which I'm sure many of your listeners will know.
It's in the Kruger, Park,
National Park. Now, in the 1960s, the then apartheid government decided that they wanted to expand the Kruger Park, push the borders to the west, and one day the trucks and the tractors arrived, and the members of the community resident there were forcibly removed, pushed to the other side of the railway line, and literally dumped in the communities there to the west. Going then to the mid-1990s, which is shortly before I got involved, the then chief of the Mdluli community, Chief MZ Mdluli, who subsequently passed away, he made representation to the then minister, the then relevant government minister, who interestingly enough was Derek Harnicom. Who was recently Minister of Tourism. As you know, he resigned with this quite recently. And that the late chief was absolutely insistent that they wanted their land back, and the minister agreed. And in fact, I have the original copy of the letter where Minister Harnicom wrote to Chief MZ Mdluli advising that the government agrees to the restitution of the land to the Mdluli community. Now, that's also extremely interesting because subsequent to that, the legislation has been changed. And in the event that there is a land claim in an environmentally protected area, there is no longer land restitution, but the communities get financial compensation in lieu thereof.
So in other words, this is a bit of a special case.
This is a very special case. That late chief, MZ Mdluli, was an extremely interesting man. As one might understand, he was not well educated. He spoke a broken English. He, in fact, was illiterate, but nevertheless extremely wise. And he really understood that the impact that this lodge could have on the Mdluli community. And that's the reason why he was so persistent. His eldest son, now Chief M.I. Mdluli, he has continued to walk the road in his father's footsteps and has been persistent and working together ourselves with the Mdluli community in partnership, have been successful in developing funding and now recently building the first phase of the lodge.
So it really is a 50-50 partnership between this community and private investors. And what is the financial benefit to them, and what is the benefit to investors?
Yeah. So let me deal with the community side of it first. The community, viewed purely from the financial perspective, and I would stress that the benefits are way beyond the pure financial perspective.
Yeah.
But in the first instance, the community gets a bed levy per guest per night. Mm-hmm. They get a monthly rental for their land, and they then get 50% of the profits of the lodge. So that is extremely beneficial. The investors in the 12J, on the other hand, are also looking for attractive returns. And this is where the magic of Section 12J kicks in that because of the effective reduced cost of capital, on the one hand, you can offer 50% of the profits to the community, but on the other hand, provide the 12J investors with an attractive financial return. Gareth, we then did something which is really extremely interesting and innovative and disruptive in the leisure industry in South Africa, and I think we will see a lot more of this. What we then said was these lodges effectively operate on a 65 to 70% occupancy per annum. A ballpark might be a bit more, might be a bit less, depends on the time of the year and might depend on certain other global economic and social factors, but more or less that's the situation. By definition, then, you've got somewhere between 25 and 30% of your beds which are unoccupied on average throughout the year.
Okay.
So in our package, what we have done is, in addition to offering the investors the financial return and the dividend, et cetera, we offer, depending on the size of the investment package, a free bed night package per annum. So, for example, R1 million subscriber for shares in Mdluli Safari Lodge, in addition to the financial element of his investment, would be entitled to 25 free bed nights per annum.
Fantastic.
And a bed night includes dinner, bed, breakfast, and one game drive activity. It could be if you want to go out on a vehicle with a Ranger, or it could be a game walk, depending on your preference.
It's a bit of a virtuous circle in that the investors then also get to see what's happening with their investment firsthand and get to have a bit of a break.
Well, in addition to that, one needs to then calculate, at least on a notional value, what is the value of that investment. And if you take the value of those bed nights, 25 bed nights at the rack rate of the lodge, 25 per annum, and multiply that by 10, the true economic value of the investment effectively doubles.
Wow.
So the internal rate of return on the package, both financial and non-financial, actually is then in the region projected of 40%.
Now, apart from the financial benefits to the community, what are the more indirect ones? You hinted at them and said that they may even be more valuable to those people than the money alone.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the first instance, obviously, there's the job creation. And through this first phase of construction, there have been anywhere between 100 and 130 community workers on the site. One of the terms of the agreement which we entered into with the Mdluli community is that we would use Mdluli community workers wherever they were available and reasonably skilled.
And there's not a huge amount of employment in that area. There's not a lot of development going on. It's mostly quite rural.
It's desperately poor. The unemployment in the region is around about 60%. So this really is massive. In addition to that, now that the construction, or at least the construction of phase one, is completed, the operating staff of the lodge has been employed, and there are 80 employees to operate the lodge, who will be there obviously on a permanent basis. And you know, through this process, there has been extensive skills development, skills transfer, and even now, you know, if one goes to the lodge, we were there this last weekend, the training of the staff on really basic things, how to clean a tent, how to serve a guest, understanding the menu. You know, it's a luxury lodge. The food needs to be quite sophisticated, and that requires a lot of training. Fire, health and safety, etc., etc.
Fantastic. Do you have a support base in terms of being able to call on the Kruger National Park, Sand Parks? Are they supportive of the venture?
Yeah, so that's actually been one of the most interesting aspects of it. You know, some fairly recently, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, there was a change in the leadership of Sand Parks, and a gentleman by the name of Mr. Fundisile Mkateni was appointed CEO of Sand Parks, and we had the opportunity to ourselves, as prospective funders, together with the community, to present to him the benefits of this lodge, and he's been extremely supportive. Great strategic understanding, and it's really been a pleasure and a privilege to work with him and his executive team.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Minister Derek Harnicombe, who was recently Minister of Tourism, among other things. And I'm sure that there is an indirect and a direct benefit to international visiting to South Africa, and therefore, you know, essentially an inflow of capital from other countries to here. A lot of people love to go on safaris. They like to go out into our national parks. Does the Mdluli Safari Lodge benefit from that?
No, absolutely. You know, I think if one looks at this, what we've managed to achieve in its perspective of what this country needs, it really is a government dream in terms of ticking all the boxes. I mean, firstly, there's a matter of a land restitution now amicably resolved. I think we all know how contested and how difficult land claims are in South Africa.
Sure.
So that's a big tick from a government point of view. Then there's the issue we've been discussing of job creation, skills development, et cetera, et cetera. And also the small, medium enterprise business opportunities which will propagate from the lodge. Then, of course, tourism, and particularly international tourism, is high on the government's agenda, low-hanging fruit in terms of economic development. This is absolutely in the sweet spot. And then, of course, you have 12J. So really everything that this government could dream of in terms of policy implementation, you have wrapped up in one project.
It's really the perfect test case for them of a number of different things. But there's another element, which is the ecological and environmental best practice when it comes to developing the lodge, because you're not just building, you're creating sustainability here. You're doing it in keeping with ecological best practice.
Sure. So this for me has been interesting. I've never been associated with the development of a lodge in an environmentally sensitive area. And one of the great learnings actually is the degree of sophistication of the legislation, but not only that, the application and the implementation of that legislation, both from the point of view of the Kruger National Park, from, you know, their it's within their immediate neighborhood, but also the obligation to appoint an environmental officer who visits the site on a regular basis, satisfies himself that everything is being done in accordance with the plans which were tabled with the authorities, and the way the plan has been evolved, and this is one of the reasons why it's a tent, and I stress a very luxurious tent, but one of the reasons it's a tent is that it should be ecologically quite sensitive and a soft footprint on the land.
Which clearly these are.
So, you know, in respect of that and all issues such as water, sewerage, electricity, building materials, construction methods, it's really been for me a very interesting journey and a lot of learning. And as I said, really impressive to see how effectively implemented this legislation is. You know, I think we all know that, unfortunately, all too often, government has good intentions with the legislation, but its application and implementation might leave something to be desired. Whereas, really, this has been absolutely fantastic to see.
How often do you get to go?
As often as possible. Well, lovely, huh? Look, it's, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a business venture, and you know, we got to deliver returns to the investors. But it's really been a privilege and a joy, and to work with the community and to develop a rapport and an understanding, sitting in a boardroom with the leadership of the community and dealing with issues of finance and cash flows and corporate governance. It's been a fantastic journey and great learning on both sides, and very humbling to, you know, we corporate financiers from Sandton, and one's mindset may be, well, you know, we know it all, but actually there's a different wisdom there, which is really a joy to behold and to learn from.
Well, congratulations on creating what really is an amazing test of so many different things, all working in close quarters and everything kind of cohesively moving forward together. It really is a tremendously successful example of what can be achieved when everybody's moving in the same direction.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And perhaps if I can, one last commercial is that the last subscription of capital for the lodge is now open and available. If interested parties would like to go onto the website mdlulisafarilodge.co.za, and there's obviously the two alternatives. If you're interested in booking at the lodge, the website will take you in that direction. But if you're interested in investing, the website will take you in a different direction, or perhaps if you'd like to do both. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Malcolm.
My pleasure. CliffCentral.com.